We're spending the hour on redistricting here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Governor Evers has called for a new commission to draw nonpartisan political maps and present them to the legislature. But Republican leaders are wrongly rejecting the idea of alternative maps. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald said last week the commission could be unconstitutional. So what questions do you have about redistricting and the legal process of drawing the state's political maps next year? We're at 800-642-1234. Join in. Ed Miller is an emeritus professor of political science at UW-Stevens Point. He is former co-chair for the Redistricting Committee for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, also co-director of the Center for the Small City. Ed, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's look at the process and the timeline first. April 1st is Census Day. What happens after that in terms of redrawing political maps, and how does the census roll into this process?
Well, what happens is that the census information is then sent to the to various county clerks, and the local districts are supposed to be drawn first. And then after the local districts are drawn, this is, you know, council districts and the like, then the state then draws its districts. However, there was a law that required the state to wait to draw the districts until the local districts were drawn. But in the last round, that law was repealed. And that's to avoid having the state districts cross the local districts.
Okay, so you're supposed to start local and grow out from there.
That was the intention of the law. But what happened last time is the Republicans were in control of the legislature, and they were afraid that there were these special elections that were these recall elections, and they would have occurred during the summer. And so they were afraid that by the time we got around to Republicans drawing the districts, it would have been at least in September, and they would have may have lost control, which they did, of one house of the legislature. So what they wound up doing is they wound up drawing the districts earlier than they're supposed to by law, and then at the same time repealing that law, which then required them to wait.
Okay, so Wisconsin has this agency, the Legislative Technology Services Bureau. What is the role of this agency?
Well, yeah, that bureau, the Technological Service Bureau, is an arm of the legislature. So that's a technical, the legislature has a number of different staffs, and this is one of the staffs, and that staff in this instance would help them draw the maps. I mean, they have no power in and of themselves, but they work for the legislature.
And how do you see the Bureau work with the legislators drawing these maps? Is there a lot of back and forth there?
Right. There obviously would be, and they also have the computer software to draw the maps. And if you want to look at the maps, you go to the Technical Service Bureau, for example, under the which is a service arm, as I say, of the legislature, and you can see the maps. But last time, the Republicans, when they drew the maps, ignored the Technical Service Bureau, but hired a private law firm where the maps were drawn.
We're talking with Ed Miller, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UW-Stevens Point. We're talking about redistricting and the process of redrawing political maps in 2021. This is an explainer with your questions front and center. What questions do you have about the role of courts in redistricting and the rulings? How do you feel about how the maps were drawn back in 2010? What do you want to see out of this process next year? We're at 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Ed, how are outside lawyers involved in this process? What do they bring?
Well, in this case, the Republicans in the state legislature contracted a private law firm, and the maps were drawn in secret in the private law firm. So, as a matter of fact, not only were Democrats not allowed to see that, But as I understand it, Republicans were brought in to look at their districts, but were not allowed to bring any, you know, paper or anything to write anything down. And it was drawn privately, and all the computer files were all secret. And subsequently, the court required the release of a lot of that information, but some of it they claimed were lost. And as a result, that information was never supplied.
Okay, so after maps are redrawn, what is the process for public input and review? How does that go?
Well, there isn't much. The legislature can do what it wants, and the legislature can hold a hearing, for example. But the legislature then passes the maps, if they can. And if they pass the maps in Wisconsin, which is not true in all the states, but in Wisconsin, the governor has to sign the new maps. And then people can challenge the maps in the courts.
So the state constitution requires that state legislative districts be compact and, quote, that they be bounded by county, precinct, town, or ward lines where possible. How difficult is it to define compact?
Well, that's been one of the issues. So there's a number of things that you can define. For example, districts have to be hooked to one another. In other words, you can't have part of a district and then territory and then the rest of the district. But this idea of compact, you're absolutely right, has been a real difficulty. So if you look at districts, not only in Wisconsin, but around the country, these districts are really odd-shaped districts, and you can't say that they're really compact. The other one was related to the law that it existed, why they cannot cross or are not supposed to cross borders in terms of the councilman districts and the county districts.
So in your legal opinion, does the Constitution then leave too much or too little leeway to deviate from established county and precinct and town boundaries?
Well, that's pretty clear, but it's easy to do. In other words, you can draw maps that are really strange maps, and even though they may not cross boundaries, but in fact is they make their shape is rather strange. For example, in the congressional district maps that are now drawn, one of the stranger things is that the Stevens Point, for example, where I am in Wisconsin Rapids, those areas are more likely to be Democratic. So what they did was they took those areas, which are right in the center of the state, and they took those areas out of the 7th congressional district, which is northern Wisconsin, and they put it in Ron Kind's district, which is the Mississippi district. So the Stevens Point, for example, votes for a congressman who represents communities all along the Mississippi. And, you know, that's by obviously a strange-shaped district.
Ed Miller is our guide as we look at the process of redrawing our state's political maps following the 2020 census. He's a UW Stevens Point Professor Emeritus of Political Science. Redistricting allows districts to be rebalanced, ensuring to the greatest extent possible that all districts are equally populated and representative. How do you think lines should be drawn? What models have you seen working elsewhere in the country? What do you want to know about the process in Wisconsin through history? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with Ed Miller right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're spending the hour on electoral boundaries in Wisconsin and elsewhere and how gerrymandering in the courts fit into the broader discussion. Gerrymandering refers to the manipulation of district lines to protect or change political power, and that is to gain an advantage or to disadvantage opponents, regardless of whether it's Democrats or Republicans doing it. Has the population of your area changed, or are there other things that might affect the census in your area? Can you point to neighborhoods or communities that you think were cut apart or kept together to gain a voter advantage? Join in 800-642-1234. Ed Miller is an emeritus political science professor from UW-Stevens Point, and he stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Andra is joining us from Kenosha this morning. Hi, Andra.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had just a couple of things. The first district encompasses Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties in their entirety, and it had half of Rock County, including Janesville. The 2010 redistricting, instead of encompassing the rest of Rock County, went and dipped into part of Waukesha County. I'm perplexed why that decision was made. And then the other point is there an opportunity for the algorithmic type software to lump in a more impartial fashion to be used in the governor's new plan?
Andra, great questions. Ed Miller, can you tackle them?
Well, yeah, these districts are drawn, you know, in this case, to keep the district more Republican, and so that was done all over the state. And what you wind up doing is, you know, some district that is more likely to be Democratic, such as, you know, like the Madison area, the congressional district. What you do is you put as many Democrats in that district as possible. What's called packing, and so therefore the Democrats win that district. But you're taking the Democrats away from the other districts. And so what you have is what's often called wasted votes. In other words, they get higher percentage votes than they need. In terms of the software, there is software to draw districts, but a computer cannot specifically draw the district. I mean, you can get there are different programs that you can do as best as possible to make the district compact. But somebody has to put in some kind of judgment, typically, to do this. Computers are used in drawing the districts and can draw certain lines, but nowhere do the computers themselves, I mean, without human involvement, draw the districts.
Andra, thanks for calling in. Ed, Republicans have said that Democrats have self-segregated themselves in large cities, and therefore there's no gerrymandering. And here's State Assembly Leader and Republican Robin Voss.
We have had the majority under a bunch of different circumstances, and this is a clear example where Democrats fielding faulty candidates and doing it in a way where their agenda does not appeal to anybody outside big cities like Madison and Milwaukee have failed to earn the votes of Wisconsinites.
What is your take on Voss's stance there?
Well, people often live in areas where there's a lot of similar people. And so therefore, cities, for example, tend to be much more democratic. And this has always been the case. And so the so-called self-selection in terms of where people live. But on the other hand, gerrymandering, which is actually, by the way, the proper pronunciation of it. Nobody does it. But gerrymandering clearly takes place. I mean, you just have to look at the Wisconsin maps, and you can see how these districts are drawn. I mentioned, you know, the congressional district, Ron Kind's district. And so what happens is that even though the Democrats are in that area, the fact is that they're packed into those districts. And so you could have a district where that district is won by Democrats, and then some of the other Democrats then moved into other districts. And so the idea that they self-select to certain districts are true in that way. I mean, there's always communities that are more Republican or more Democrat, and that kind of division may be even more with more polarization of the parties. But the fact is that to say that there's not been gerrymandering of the districts is simply not true.
We're talking with We're talking with Ed Miller, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UW-Stevens Point, talking about the process of redistricting and redrawing political maps in 2021. Your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Matt from Wausau emailed to say, by removing the metropolitan areas of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin Rapids, and Stevens Point, Republicans have made the 7th congressional district no longer competitive. Ed, how has the map of Wisconsin's 7th district changed?
Right, that's what I was talking about here, because this is the Stevens Point area.
Okay.
That district was represented by a Democrat, Dave Obey, who was elected in 1969. And so Dave Obey represented that district. And then when a Republican won that district, in the election, to make sure that he wins that district in subsequent years, what they did was they changed the district, and that's where they took the Democrats out of the district, and they put them in Ryan Kind's district, and they took some Republicans, which was north of Green Bay, because the district has to be equal in population, and put them in that district. And that's so Sean Duffy would have a secure district. Because it was an election after Dave Obey had retired that a Republican won the district. Sean Duffy won the district because it was a more competitive district, but now it's no longer really a competitive district after the redistricting.
Bill from Green Lake emailed to ask, what happens if the legislature and governor can't agree on a map? Bill thinks the federal courts used to draw maps in that case, but wonders if they'll do that since the Supreme Court basically washed its hands of the matter.
Right. And they did. Supreme Court washed their hands of the matter in terms of declaring districts that were partisan districts that were drawn to minimize one of the parties, so discriminate against one of the parties. It does, the courts do act under the 1965 Voting Rights Act to throw out districts, which it did in Wisconsin and the Milwaukee area, if it disadvantages minorities, but not partisan. That was the Supreme Court case. However, if the districts are not drawn in equal fashion, or they can't draw the districts, then a case can be filed, and the court can declare that these are unconstitutional, and the court will draw the district. So both the state Supreme Court as well as the federal court both have jurisdiction over this matter. And so what happened in the year 2000s, after the census in 2000, in which the state legislature could not draw the districts, they could not come up with a district, that the federal court drew the district. So what happened was, after 2000, the state Supreme Court, which had said that they couldn't do it, that they didn't have the mechanism to do this, that the state Supreme Court under Shirley Abrahamson said, well, it should be probably done by a state Supreme Court because they are elected by the citizens of Wisconsin. And so that was the committee that I co-chaired, tried to get a mechanism for the state Supreme Court to draw the districts. But what happened was that even though that mechanism was tentatively adopted, Gableman was then appointed to the court, which is Republican, and reversed the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court decided that they couldn't do it, that it was a too political matter. That's what they said at the time.
Well, let's
That they did not want to draw the districts.
Let's try to squeeze in one call here. Kevin in Richland Center. Kevin, hi.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. You made the comment a little earlier that Representative Voss said that it was a matter of inferior candidates being run. If you look over the last couple of election cycles, you can see that anywhere from a third to half of the races were unopposed. And if that's not evidence of a gerrymandered system, I'm not really sure what is.
Kevin, thanks for the call. We're short on time. Ed Miller, can you respond to that?
Well, yeah, most of the districts in Wisconsin are not are safe. They're either state Democratic districts where they could pack them in there or safe Republican districts. So they're not competitive districts. Even if there is a candidate, it's simply not a competitive district. So you look at the few districts that are competitive districts in Wisconsin, and huge amounts of money are then spent in those districts. And you're wondering why. And that's because they're the only competitive districts in Wisconsin.
Ed, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Ed Miller, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at UW-Stevens Point, former co-chair for the Redistricting Committee for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Coming up, we continue the conversation on redistricting and election law issues with a look at how other states handle map drawing. What model should Wisconsin try to emulate? What questions do you have about the role of courts in redistricting and the rulings? We're at 800-642-1234. We have Michael Lee, Senior Counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice, right after this news update on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're spending the hour on redistricting and election law issues. These are contentious. There is a difference of opinion on what redistricting should look like and what is meant by gerrymandering. Democratic groups say independent commissions are the wave of the future. Meanwhile, we see more and more litigation trying to throw out existing congressional and legislative maps. Do you plan to attend any of the input sessions for the governor's new map drawing commission? What advice will you give? We're at 800-642-1234. Michael Lee is senior counsel for the Brennan Center's Democracy Program at New York University's School of Law. His work focuses on redistricting, voting rights, and elections. Michael, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So you'll give us a bird's eye view here of how states are handling redistricting challenges and maybe tie it back to Wisconsin where applicable. But let's start with what happened in North Carolina, these remedial maps that will now govern the 2020 elections. What can you tell us about the Common Cause case in that state and what the ruling means for other partisan gerrymandering challenges?
Sure. So in North Carolina, both the congressional maps and the state legislative maps were redrawn after they were found to be partisan gerrymanders under the state constitution as opposed to the federal constitution. The U.S. Supreme Court has said that you can't bring partisan gerrymandering cases in federal court, but that doesn't mean that you can't bring them if the state constitution is amenable under state law. And the state court in North Carolina threw out the maps and ordered them redrawn. And politically, that means that Democrats now have a chance to win two more congressional seats, most likely, and likewise have a chance to take control of at least one of the chambers of the North Carolina legislature, depending on how the election shapes out. So it's a big deal in that sense, and it suggests a possible way forward in other states, assuming that the law is as favorable as North Carolina's is to perhaps police the practice of partisan gerrymandering, which was really out of control when maps were last redrawn in 2011. And, you know, given that the federal courts have said that you can't bring cases in federal court, you know, a lot of people are wondering, well, what can we do in North Carolina? Perhaps provides an example.
Well, the Princeton gerrymandering project, they filed an amicus brief stating that both House and Senate remedial maps in North Carolina, they said, hey, guys, these are still uncompetitive and they are still skewed. So how did the court respond?
Well, you know, I think, you know, there's a dispute about whether, you know, you could go, you know, what the ideal map looks like. It's clear that the maps are better than what they were before. And, you know, the ideal process, of course, would be one that involves public input and where you sort of have maps shaped around community values and what a community wants in terms of, you know, how districts are drawn, as opposed to, you know, a court or a legislature trying to do it. Because the reality is when the maps were redrawn, they were redrawn, you know, by the legislature, right? And the legislature, you know, inherently has a self-interest in making sure that that they protect their political party, they protect their own interests. And so there really are better ways to do maps. California and Arizona, for example, and next time around Michigan and Colorado, we use independent commissions where everyday citizens draw maps and they get together and they hold hearings around the state. They get lots of input. All of this is done in public. And you really end up with maps that are much more responsive to what people want and also more politically responsive. In California, for example, as Democrats win more votes, they win more seats. But likewise, if Republicans win more votes, they would win more seats. And that's sort of what most people think that democracy should look like. The reality is that that's very hard to get when a legislature draws maps, which is why a lot of people favor moving to a more independent or less politicized process.
Something that caught our eye here was the redistricting consultant who assisted in North Carolina. In November, there were more than 100,000 files pertaining to the late Thomas Hofeller's redistricting work in states all over the country that were released from a protective order. What was his influence on how legislative maps are drawn across the country?
So Thomas Hofeller was a longtime Republican redistricting consultant, and he's gotten a lot of attention. But there certainly are other people like that on both sides, both Democrats and Republicans, who participate in what has historically been a very shadowy backroom sort of process. Right, most people don't have a lot of visibility in how maps are drawn. In Wisconsin, last time around for the legislative maps, even lawmakers didn't see the entire map until the very end. Republican lawmakers only got to see their own district, and Democrats didn't get to see the map at all. And so this has always been a very shadowy process, and it's been driven by the desire to sort of maximize political advantage for, various people. And one of the things that we see in the files that got released is that Hofeller also was working for large Republican donors like Paul Singer, and trying to figure out how to maximize Republican advantage in places like Texas, perhaps by not changing the way that you count people or draw districts in a way that would have hurt Latino political power and helped Republicans. And so, it really sort of shows how the sausage is made, and it's not very pretty, right? I mean, it's not very appetizing after you actually understand how the sausage is made.
Talking with Michael Lee, senior counsel for the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University's School of Law. You can join in as we spend the hour on redistricting and processes that he looks at across the country. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Donna now in Burlington. Hi, Donna.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Prior to the 2010 election, the lines were started at the lowest aldermanic districts, but in 2010, the maps came down from the state with the lines already set in them, and the communities had to fit into the state lines. What difference do you think that makes in how the population is proportioned?
Donna, thanks. So maps drawn top down instead of bottom up, if you will, Michael.
Yeah, what happened in Wisconsin in 2011 when the maps were drawn is that one party, in this case Republicans, had sole control of the process. And what we know from not only Wisconsin but around the country is when you have one party in control of everything, they will do the process in a way that maximizes their advantage. That becomes the paramount concern. There's very little check on the process. And you see that what Donna talked about is a perfect example of that. Instead of building districts from the bottom up, you come in with a preconceived desire in terms of the number of seats you want, and then you rework the maps and rework things in order to prioritize that. And the result is that, in Wisconsin, there are plenty of places where districts change wildly and they sort of stretch and they join together communities that don't really have a whole lot to do with one another or don't make a lot of sense or make less sense than other configurations. And, the reality is that when one party is in control, one thing will matter, which is that their own political interest in the interest of their political party. And that's a perfect example Before that, Wisconsin had a much fairer process, in part because control was split, and you had to have dialogue, but when Wisconsin, after the 2010 election, became a Republican-controlled state, Republicans went to town. And I should say, there's no doubt that Democrats, would be tempted under similar circumstances. But that's the danger of one-party control.
Okay, so Michael, riddle me this. So we've seen this onslaught of litigation over the past decade. There is a lot of attention being paid to partisan gerrymandering, and we have new tools, new metric tools like the efficiency gap. Do you anticipate legislatures will naturally be more cautious in 2020 in whether maps are skewed in a particular direction?
Well, I certainly think that there will be a lot more attention. When maps were last redrawn, people didn't quite understand the issue as much. It's an issue now that really resonates with everyday citizens and voters. And they will have a lot more tools at their disposal to instantly measure maps, right? It was hard in 2011 to sort of know, is this a good map or is this a bad map, but now there are lots of these analytic measures. There are lots of things like alternative maps, where you have a computer generate hundreds of thousands of randomly generated maps using the same criteria, and you kind of figure out where the map that's being considered by the legislature fits on that. So you're able to see when maps are skewed in ways that you weren't able to before, and you're able to do so almost real time. And I think that will change a lot of the dialogue. And on top of that, people are much more likely to go to hearings, much more likely to protest, much more likely to be engaged than in the past. And so along with this new citizen activism, they have new tools. And that's, I think, going to be really powerful and change things. I don't know that lawmakers on their own would do that, but I think if people are ready to go out and to organize and to advocate, they will have a lot of tools at their disposal to engage, the public, the media, and all other stakeholders in this process.
Well, you mentioned activism. It's hard not to miss the yard signs in Wisconsin that say, "This time Wisconsin deserves fair maps." What kind of activism do you see around political maps?
It has totally transformed. If you go back 15 years ago and you did polling on which people did on redistricting or gerrymandering, they didn't understand what redistricting was. Gerrymandering, they kind of understood that, but not really. Now it's something which people in Michigan who had a ballot initiative in 2018, or in Ohio, which also did reforms in 2018, they say they go door to door in very mixed partisan neighborhoods, knock on Republican doors, knock on Democratic doors. Everybody signs the petition because all you have to say is, we're trying to take power away from the politicians and give it back to the people. And everybody's on board with that. And there's a lot more sense now that the system is somehow rigged to produce certain results, and that redistricting is a big part of that. And so it really is an issue that now resonates with people, and the yard signs are a perfect example of that.
We have to pause right there. Michael Lee is our guide, spending the hour on an election maps explainer with your thoughts as well. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, taking a deep dive this hour into the world of election maps, Wisconsin maps and the courts, what they have to say. In Iowa, the work of redrawing legislative and congressional districts is handled by a state agency. The agency must draw districts compact and contiguous without considering the impact on politicians or parties. What do you think of that model? 800-642-1234. Michael Lee stays with us. He's senior counsel at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. Let's go back to the phones now. Mike is joining us from Oconomowoc this morning. Hi, Mike.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just had kind of a question about Wisconsin. It seems like every time redistricting happens, there's challenges. One side or the other is going to challenge. And in the state of Wisconsin, we have just three small population centers, Milwaukee, Green Bay, and Madison. But otherwise, the bulk of the population lives outside these areas. So I'm curious as to, why does Wisconsin seem like it's so off balance when the bulk of the people don't live in the population centers?
Mike, thanks for the call. And Michael, just for some point of reference here, Milwaukee's population is about 595,000. Wisconsin overall, 5.8 million.
Yeah, you know, Wisconsin certainly, especially last decade, had a lot of really bad gerrymandering. And the reality is that, you know, there are always some disputes. I think last decade stands out. There have been disputes in other decades, but those have been more quickly resolved. You know, the reality is that not everyone is always going to be happy with a map, and in America, we get to go to court to do that. But the real question is whether, you know, those cases can be quickly resolved or not. In some places like Texas or North Carolina, the litigation has lasted almost the whole of a decade. Wisconsin generally has been better than that.
Oh, I think we just lost Michael Lee at the Brennan Center for Justice at New York University. Line just went dead there. We're talking about redistricting and how the states handle election maps, looking back from 2010 ahead at 2020. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's take another call now. Rick is joining us from Clover this morning. Hi, Rick.
Yeah, I wanted to find out, kind of carry off what the individual just called in last night. You've got three basic senators in this state that are Democrats, the rest are Republicans. Why are the three Republicans the Democrats seem to be so upset with the way their lines are drawn when it does actually represent what most of the counties are in this state? Most of the counties in this state are Republican counties. Most of the state is basically outside of your Milwaukee, your Madison, your La Crosse, and a little bit of Green Bay, are Republican. So what's the problem? And then why would you sit there and protest because you didn't get something that you didn't like, because all of a sudden now you're not in the district that doesn't represent your beliefs? We had a Democrat for a representative for years that didn't represent our views. We had to keep going and calling and trying to finally get somebody in there that was actually in office representing our values. Now we got that. Why do we want to change that?
Rick, thanks for the call. Michael Lee, are you back now?
I am back. I don't know what happened. I think our phone rebooted.
All right. Well, I mean, Rick is saying that, you know, Republicans have been in the districts outlying of the cities, and that's just how it is, that, you know, in more rural parts of Wisconsin, it leans Republican. So this is how it just naturally goes.
Yeah, I mean, the reality, well, political geography does impact how maps come out. I live in Brooklyn, New York, which is very heavily Democratic, and you couldn't draw a Republican district if your life depended on it. And likewise, the other places where it's hard to draw Democratic districts. But the process should be, if that is the case, then we should not be afraid of having an open process where independent map drawers draw maps, because there are things other than political considerations that come into play. You know, there are things about whether a community of color can elect candidates, or whether a town should be split or kept whole. And those are decisions that are whole and separate apart from political considerations. And we shouldn't be afraid if in fact political geography favors one party over the other, we shouldn't be afraid then of having independent map drawers draw maps in order to give people a voice on those other issues that are equally important besides whether a D or an R wins the district.
Well, speaking of independent map drawers, the Iowa model of redistricting often comes up in conversations. What is the Iowa model?
In Iowa, the state legislative services agency draws the maps with a little bit of input from an advisory commission, and it has really strict criteria that it has to follow about keeping counties together and keeping districts equally populated and so on and so forth. And it's a model that's worked really well for Iowa, but the folks in Iowa would even say that they're not sure that it would work for a more complicated state where, for example, you have a lot more non-white voters and you sort of have to like balance out their claims to political power, or where you have, you know, very different communities. You know, Iowa is very homogenous, and it's something that's worked really well for Iowa, but it may not work in more complicated states. But it's something to consider. You know, it could work well in some states, but it probably wouldn't work well in, say, Texas or California, just because they're two
complicated, and you don't, you know, you wouldn't want like bureaucrats in the state capitol drawing something in the state that's that complicated.
Oh, so there's just not a one size fits all model for redistricting, it sounds like.
There isn't. I mean, you know, there are lots of ways to get at this. You know, the key thing is to create room for everybody to participate, to allow to create a system where one party can't dominate the process, and that's open and transparent. But there are lots of ways to do those things.
Let's go to Mark now in Ashland. Good morning, Mark.
Yeah, hello. Good morning.
Go ahead.
Well, my comment is that the whole process is phony from the start to the finish. Democracy depends upon one person, one vote. This gerrymandering, this districting, it's obsolete in the day of the computer. There is absolutely no reason for it. To start with, it was another banker's trick, like Hamilton's Electoral College. It was meant for one purpose only, and it always was to keep those in with money and power.
Mark, thanks for the call. Mark is saying, you know, this should really come down to one person, one vote, Michael Lee.
Well, he's absolutely correct that, you know, the Constitution does require that districts be equally populated, but there are lots of different ways that you could draw districts, literally hundreds of thousands of ways that you could draw districts. You could keep draw a line on Smith Street or move it two blocks up to Jones Street. And there are lots of considerations that go into that. And the best way to sort of figure out of those hundreds of thousands of potential options is to get public input and to have a really robust process where people can testify, where they can submit their own maps, where they can comment on other people's maps and say, whoa, you're splitting our community, or we share a school district with this neighboring town and we want to be kept together. Those are all legitimate things. And so, you know, the best way to do that is to have a very open and robust process.
In the last few moments we have with you, can a universally accepted, quote unquote, fair map even be drawn for a given legislature? Is fairness too far-fetched?
Well, no. There's no map that you could produce that you would get 100% agreement on. But I think that there is a range of fair maps that people can agree are reasonable choices under the circumstances that reasonably treat the political parties, that reasonably treat communities, that reasonably give people of color an ability to participate in the political process and elect candidates. We may not agree, you know, you might say like the map should be a little bit more here or there. But, you know, I think we can all agree on when a map is like really skewed. And so, you know, within the range of reasonable things that you could wear to the beach on a summer day, you might wear shorts. I might wear, you know, canvas pants. But, you know, we can, but we wouldn't wear a parka. Right. And so, you know, we can at least, you know, put in place systems that would prevent parka type maps.
Michael, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad to do it.
Michael Lee, Senior Counsel for the Brennan Center's Democracy Program at New York University School of Law. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.